Hi everyone. Welcome to another episode of NHASED Spotlight, a podcast. This is where we discuss educational topics in order to be a catalyst for conversation to inspire excellence in teaching, learning, and leading. This is Jan Yost, the Executive Director of NHASED and your host for this episode. Welcome to NHASED Spotlight. Today, we welcome Allie Rodman, who is the founder and chief learning officer of The Learning Loop, which is an educational consulting organization that provides professional learning services to districts, schools, nonprofit organizations, and businesses internationally. Allison has experiences as a teacher, instructional coach, school leader, director of professional development, board member, and consultant. Phew, that's a lot, Allie. So before we meet Allison, I'd like to introduce my co-host for today's episode, Tom Krumrine. And Tom is the director of assessment in the Concord School District. Tom, as always, wonderful to have you with us.
It's great to be here. I've been reading about our guest the last week, and it's very exciting to talk with her.
Agreed. As I mentioned, we're here with Allison Rodman, and we're taking this opportunity to discuss her book, Personalized Professional Learning, A Job-Embedded Pathway for Elevating Teacher Voice. Allison, it is such a pleasure to have you with us, and we're really looking forward to learning a lot more about your book.
Thank you so much, Jan and Tom. I'm incredibly excited to be joining you here today and all of your members with New Hampshire ASCD. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, it is truly our pleasure. So I'm always curious when we talk to an author, what led you to write the book? What was the motivation? What was the gap you were seeing?
So as a teacher, as I'm sure many of the teachers and educators listening have experienced, I sat in way too many bad trainings, right? Whether they were staff meetings or workshops or professional learning communities, we just kept missing the mark in professional development. And as we were asking teachers to design and facilitate incredibly powerful and differentiated learning experiences for our students, we weren't delivering in the same way for teachers and other educators across the system. So as a teacher and then a leader myself, I kept asking these questions and saying, we've got to do better. There has to be a better way, not only to personalize learning for them, but also to facilitate those experiences so that they were more engaging, they led to more job-embedded practice and so forth. So the book really grew out of an interest, but also a need that I continued to see not only in my practice, but across the field.
So relevant. So I'm wondering, both as a former school leader and now as a leader of an association, how can we better personalize professional learning?
So Jen, I think we've seen this evolve over time. If we were to look back several years ago, when I was first kind of getting into this work and really looking at different districts and how this was playing out, I feel as though we were in a space where teachers and leaders had very little, if any, choice. We were looking at professional development as a series of steps or schedules that we would go through at the beginning of the year, throughout the year, and the end of year. And it was a very prescribed roadmap, if you will. Over time, luckily, we have seen some of that begin to evolve. So we've seen some professional learning menus develop. We've seen different pathways or choices provided to educators. But if we're really personalizing, I think we need to do better than that. We need to look not only at the choices, but how we're inviting those learner voices into the space to set goals, to determine success criteria, and ultimately help co-create what some of those professional learning experiences look like. I think we're in a place right now where we're defaulting to giving back that PD time as just planning time and claiming that that's personal, but it's still continuing to miss the mark when we think about professional learning for educators across our systems.
That makes me think of, we're having a debate in our school district right now about professional development. And it makes me think of two things. I'll ask the one first. We're getting professional development confused, and maybe you'll tell me I'm wrong, but with there are things that are like board policy and laws, like CPR training, know and tell, which is like mandatory reporting, bullying, new laws on critical race theory that came out from the state, for example. How do you balance those, of which I don't love that kind of PD either, I know it's important. How do you balance that with, like, I saw something that Ann Davies did years ago, and it still informs how I teach and how I do formative assessment. How do you balance that or make one better, something like that?
Tom, when I work with facilitators, one of the very first things that I coach is getting explicitly clear on our purpose for the professional learning engagement. So often when I talk with leaders, you know, they will tell me about these different categories of professional learning. Well, that's our new teacher induction, or these are our workshops, or these are our PLCs, or this is the state mandated training. And that's a category, right? That's how we can kind of classify it as a type of PD, but it's not the purpose. It's not why we show up. So many of the categories of PD that you were just mentioning that might come down from the state and that are absolutely necessary for us to continue to be professionals in our field, the purpose of that type of PD, quite honestly, is very compliance driven. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, in much the same way that we might look to a plant manager to continue to engage in safety related PD for his or her space. There are certain expectations of us as educators to continue to provide safe spaces for our students. But we want to be clear with learners in that moment that in some cases, the purpose is compliance driven. Whereas in other cases, the purpose of the professional learning might be to build community. It might be to develop a skill set. It might be to shift a mindset. But until we get really clear on why we're gathering in the first place, we can't then set the goals and the norms of what those modes of interaction are going to look like together.
Yeah, I know what's happening is there are these surveys that say teachers in our district don't like PD. And I was like, wait, I like PD. But I wasn't thinking of, you know, I wasn't thinking of the mandatory stuff, even though they occur on what we call professional days. So it was making me think a lot. Because I've learned a lot from, you know, things like a book study on a Bob Marzano book that a bunch of teachers and I did over the course of a year. That kind of PD is, you know, different than the other. I wonder another thing, because a lot of times teachers, I've been an assistant principal for many years, now I'm in assessment. A lot of teachers say, all right, if we have a professional day, let us choose. And many choose well, but then some choose areas that are not a growth goal of the district, or not something that really they could benefit from working on. How do you wrestle with that?
One of the challenges here is that in order to do this right, in order to do it well, it requires a fair amount of pre-planning on the part of the school leader or the district-wide system. And by that, I mean, we need to start with a needs assessment of our educators. We need to be looking at observation and evaluation data with the same level of analysis that we might look at our student achievement data. And we need to then triangulate the pieces of information that we're collecting from the needs assessments that express what teachers want, right? From the observation and evaluation data that might show us what they need, and from our student growth and assessment data that shows us what they need, and putting those pieces of the puzzle together then to co-construct that menu of offerings that you're describing, Tom. But then the next layer of that needs to be a very proactive conversation between a leader and a teacher, or a leader and a counselor, or a leader and a support staff member, such that they are co-identifying based on strengths and growth opportunities what the most appropriate pathway or set of offerings are going to be for that individual. So that when days like you're describing come up, it's not so much that they're pre-slotted, you know, into an immovable path, but the appropriate conversations have taken place so that they have some direction and they have some focus rather than somewhat of a haphazard selection of offerings as they're going through a menu.
I like that. That's a good suggestion. And it matches with what some of your goals are, because it's something I can do right away, which I like. I must say on your website, I'm searching for the name, Pulse, the yep. Learning Loop. Yep. I really like the PDF of learning experiences that you have. You learn a lot from that alone. But I wonder about, you talk about co-creation, social construction, and self-discovery. And I just wasn't quite sure, you know, I read, you know, briefly what you wrote, but can you tell us more about those?
Certainly. So when we talk about personalizing professional learning, we can start with the needs assessment and get a sense of what folks want. We can even invite them into the goal setting process. But as facilitators, we have a responsibility not to stop the personalization at that point, but instead continue to invite and invest the learners in that space who ultimately pick that experience or that engagement to co-create right alongside with us. I think that sometimes when educators leave professional learning experiences feeling as though they didn't get what they wanted out of the time, it was because they weren't true co-creators in the process. So they might've just experienced a content dump where a facilitator gets up, they give a ton of strategies, they might even give a little bit of planning time, but there's not real space dedicated for teacher to teacher or teaching assistant to sit shoulder to shoulder, grapple with the content, be honest about what some of the roadblocks on the ground are going to be, troubleshoot through them together, and then have a clear plan of action moving forward. So when we talk about co-creating that learning experience, I don't want the needs assessment portion of the planning to end just at the selection of the topic. I want to invite those learners in to say, what do you hope to get out of this? What do you envision that our time together is going to look like? And then through social construction, how are we going to work through some of these tools, work through some of these strategies, and leave feeling as though we have very clear next steps, not as a solo learner, but as a collaborative group that's able to see that practice through on the ground.
I love that. One of the other things that I saw was, I love this difference between running a school or leading a learning organization. And I think every administrator wants to lead a learning organization in the middle of the summer. How do you get yourself back on track when it's November and there are already 1,000 class cuts at your high school of a large number of kids? And you're like, I have to manage the building. How do you get back on track as an administrator?
This may not be a popular opinion, but as a former administrator myself, I can honestly say we all need a hiding place in the building. And, you know, so often when we're coaching new leaders, we say, get out of your office, get into classrooms. And the folks who are the best instructional leaders do that naturally. You don't want to be in your office. You want to be sitting shoulder to shoulder with teachers and students. But inevitably, what often happens is you become too accessible. And you don't allow yourself as a learning leader the reflective space necessary to take a step back, to call a timeout, to invest in a pause for yourself that allows you to stop with the day-to-day management and instead really take stock of where things are as a learning ecosystem. How are things moving or stopping or starting together? And what are the ways that you need to either kind of accelerate certain processes to make sure that those folks are moving along the way that they need to, or if you're seeing other folks start to maybe burn out, kind of push pause on them a little bit and encourage not just that self-care, but that community care that we know is so important for sustainability. So Yeah, I mean, we talk about the teacher slump in October, November, right? But there's very much that administrator slump where you're like, wow, I had some really awesome plans when I sat down in June and July, but you've got to almost, I'm working with a group of instructional coaches right now. And part of the work that we're doing is not just planning the calendar for the next year, but also scheduling out those pauses where they are going to meet as a team and make sure that they're coming together to really assess where they are and what adjustments they need to make moving forward.
I love that. You just reminded me of something that I read about called the vault. And I never used it. I thought that sounded too scary or something. But the idea of, you know, saying, okay, for this hour, I'm going to close my door. And I was lucky because there were four other assistant principals. And we could talk to each other and say, I really need to work on something. And if there was a true emergency, they could cover for us, we cover for each other. But it makes me think of that, actually taking time to do some thinking.
Yeah, I had an amazing administrative support staff member who I would always tell where I was going, right? And he or she always knew, okay, if it's this is what constitutes a true emergency, and here's where you can find me. But sometimes the best place to kind of hide is in the classroom of a trusted teacher that you know is going to be deep in the work themselves, engaging in planning or giving student feedback. And for what anybody else knows, the two of you are just in there co-planning when in reality, you're kind of cohabitating solo planning, right? Like it's, you know that that's a safe space where you can dig in and get deep in the work.
So Allie, one of the things that I love about your book are all the resources that you have and that teachers and administrators can use. So again, I want to go back to the school leader and thinking about how can they utilize that book to benefit their school, the students, their teachers.
Jen, when I sat down to write it, one of the very first questions I asked the publisher was, what is my limit on charts and tables and action planning tools, right? As a visual learner myself and a former school leader, I know how critical those pieces are to grab and go. You can read a paragraph of text, but then when you know that you're gonna have to translate that into what it looks like on the ground, that part alone can feel overwhelming. So I was very intentional in the drafting of the book as well as how the pieces came together to think about what does this mean in the hands of a systems leader, a school leader, or even a teacher leader to move from idea to action. So the tools are very much intended as a roadmap. You can use one or all of them in sequence or bounce around. But my hope is that leaders are able to pull them out one at a time and be able to say, okay, this is my next step. It doesn't have to feel as overwhelming as it might seem on the surface to not just provide all these choices, but make sure that they're facilitated exceptionally well if I can just take the very next step. So when leaders pick up the book, I often tell them, don't feel like you need to do all of this in 1 year. Pick the appropriate entry point for you and your community, and let's focus on getting that done really well before then we move to the next piece. Because when we get in that conversation about choice, one of the biggest mistakes that I see leaders and facilitators make is they offer too many. So we think that we've got to please tons of people and you come out of the gate with 20, 30, 40 offerings that are inevitably facilitated really poorly. When in reality, I would love to see schools and districts offering, you know, 3, 5, 7 things and put the emphasis on strong design and facilitation so that then teachers and other staff members walk away and say, wow, that was really powerful professional learning. I want to do more of that.
I love that approach. It's just so practical again. So thank you for sharing that. And Allie, thank you so much for a wonderful conversation. Really appreciate it and truly encourage people to get the book. Again, it's Personalized Professional Learning, a Job Embedded Pathway for Elevating Teacher Voice. Thanks so much and take care.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of NHASCD Spotlight. Remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and be sure to visit us on our website, nhascd.org.